Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Techorama 2017. It's our pleasure to welcome you for the first time here at Kinepolis in Antwerp. Let's kick off this conference with a keynote from Scott Guthrie, Executive Vice President of Cloud and Enterprise at Microsoft. Nobody else can better update you of the newest technologies in Azure. We are delighted to have the man in the red shirt back in Belgium. Please give Scott a warm Belgium welcome.
Cool. Great. People hear me okay? Great. Well, good morning, and thank you so much for having me back here. It's been, I'm trying to think how many years since I've presented in Belgium. I think at least 3 years. And it's great to be back, and thank you for everyone for attending this great event. And I'm really honored to be able to kick it off and start things. And I thought I'd begin by talking about the journey to the cloud, that I think is something that probably everyone in this room is thinking about, how they go from where they are today to take advantage of even more. And what I thought I'd do today is just talk a little bit about some of the things that we're seeing with the cloud and really have a pretty intensive set of demos. I've got four machines here that we're gonna try to show demos on and kind of highlight just some of the things that you can take advantage of and some of the work that we're doing to make that journey even easier. How many people here are using the cloud today? Great. How many people here are using Azure today? Great. Well, thank you. You know, for people that haven't used the cloud yet, you know, I think this is an incredibly exciting time to be a developer. You know, you think about all the different types of technologies that are out there and some of the new ways to build applications, whether it's microservices or containers or serverless computing or, you know, things like DevOps. You know, there's just huge opportunities for all of us in this room to take advantage of in terms of ways that we can build fundamentally new applications and technologies. And, you know, events like this are a fantastic way to learn more about those. At the same time, I think one of the things that I hear a lot in my travels around from developers is all this stuff is great, but at the same time, it's almost overwhelming. There are so many new technologies to take advantage of. How do you become an expert in everything? You know, how do you, when you start taking advantage of the cloud, also live up to the expectations that a lot of organizations now have on you to be able to deliver things even faster? And then also, how do you make sure that everything that you're building is secure in a world where security is now top of mind for everyone? And it's these types of concerns that kind of we've tried to really embrace as we think about Azure and as we design what we're building with our cloud platform. And you know, really try to build a system that doesn't just provide a bunch of features, but really tries to help guide your success with those features and enables you to be even more successful with them. And specifically, you know, we focus on how do you take the most cutting-edge technology and innovation and make it approachable and usable for every developer? How do we do that with a framework of trust that enables you to build applications that are secure by default and can be used to expand any business? And then last but not least, how do you deliver results and have the productivity that you all expect from your development tools and from your platform so that you can deliver solutions faster than ever before at very high quality? And that's really what we're trying to do with Azure. And what I thought I'd do is just kick things off by just actually diving into the product and give you some examples of some of the things that we're trying to do across those different themes. So enough slides, let's actually show some code. So what I thought I'd do to begin with is show off our Azure management portal and kind of just walk through the product a little bit in terms of what you can do with it and some of the things that we're trying to do to kind of take all this capability, all this power, and really make it super approachable. And so if you're new to Azure, this is our Azure Management Console, or portal as we call it. It runs in a browser and basically enables you to see all the resources that you create and manage in the cloud. And you can see here, you can customize your default dashboard. So you know, one of the little known features is you can kind of drag around any of your resources and customize it however you want. You can also create monitoring graphs that you can embed directly on the dashboard so you can see kind of the most common metrics for the most important resources that you manage. And then obviously you can go ahead and create new resources just by clicking the new button. And you know, we have all different types of resources that you can create. So for example, I could create virtual machines, I could create databases, I could create web apps, serverless, containers, and more. So let's go ahead and look at a couple types of resources that we might want to go ahead and manage. Just again, to kind of show off a little bit in terms of the power and the capability that you can take advantage of with this platform. Well, before I do that, let me just plug in my other demo machine, which I noticed is going to sleep. There you go, now it has power. So you know, one of the things I mentioned you can create, obviously, with the cloud is something like a virtual machine. And so I'm going to show you an existing virtual machine that I created earlier. And this is taking advantage of our new M-series of VMs inside Azure. So this is 3.5 terabytes of RAM and 128 CPU cores. And so the beauty is I can spin this up and create one of these things in about 60 seconds on average and run it anywhere around the world. It gives you kind of a sense a little bit of the power that the cloud really has now in terms of being able to just create these resources on the fly. And you know, you can see if you're new to Azure, we give you a way to manage it and see kind of the common metrics. I can also go ahead and connect to this VM. So it's just going to go ahead and download the RDP file. I'll log in here. And you can kind of see all those 120 cores now running on this massive machine, 3.5 terabytes of RAM. You know, that's sort of how easy it is to take advantage of and leverage, you know, an immense amount of power. Now, what's kind of cool here, and this is, I think, the first time ever it's been demoed, is you might say, well, what could I do with 3.5 terabytes of RAM? That sounds like a massive machine. Well, this is great for SAP workloads. It's great for enormous databases and others. One of the cool things we're also doing with Azure, and again, just trying to make it super easy to take advantage of, is how many people here use Hyper-V today? Managed VMs. So this 3.5 terabyte machine, if I close it down here, one of the cool things we now support is what's called nested virtualization. And so just give you an example of some of the cool things you can do is I actually, in this virtual machine, have two other virtual machines running within my own environment. And so if I double click here, I'm now opening a virtual machine inside my virtual machine in Azure. And I could even open another virtual machine within that virtual machine within Azure, and again, manage it all, you know, in just a few clicks. And this would be another VM that's running inside the same Uber VM. In this case here, it's a Linux console. And you know, again, it's pretty easy to take advantage of, pretty easy to manage all that. And you know, the nice thing is I can just start with a browser, and away we go. So not only can I use a browser now, but one of the things that we also now support is the ability to use a mobile device as well. And so what I'm going to do here is, don't type that code. But there you go. So this is my phone device here. And one of the things that we now have that you can install on your phone is a mobile version of our Azure portal. And so this is a native app that basically connects to Azure. It's using the same APIs that the portal does. And now you can see here, I can manage all the VMs and all the resources that I was doing inside the browser, really at the click of a button. So here is my website with my blog on it. You can kind of see how it's doing from a performance perspective. If I wanted to restart it, I could. If I wanted to stop and start it, I could. You know, basically all at the click of a button. And you'll sort of see us add more and more capabilities into the native mobile experiences. And again, you'll be able to run it across all devices and be able to manage it really at ease. The hardest part of the talk. How do I make this disappear? There we go. The other thing that we've been hard at work at in terms of our overall management experience is making it possible not just from a GUI-based experience to manage things, but also from APIs as well as from the command line and from scripting. So anyone here use PowerShell? Anyone here use Bash or CLI tools? Number of people? So one of the things we've now done inside our Azure portal is added this little icon here in the top right. It looks like a command shell, and it, click it. In fact, surprise, it creates a command shell for you directly inside the browser. And so you can obviously install our PowerShell tools as well as our Bash CLI tools locally on your machine. But if you don't have them installed or you just want to be able to do something quickly, the cool thing is basically just by clicking that little command shell link, we'll create a Linux VM for you automatically, in this case here because it's a Bash shell in Azure, and remote it to your browser. And so now I have a full Linux instance running in my browser that I can now run any command script against and use to manage all my Azure resources. And today this works for Bash. You'll see in the dropdown PowerShell coming a little bit later this summer. And that basically enables you to, again, manage everything with just a few keystrokes. So let's zoom in here, show what this looks like. So if I wanted to, I could go ahead and just list the AZ tool, which is our built-in Azure CLI tool. And this gives you commands to manage pretty much everything. You can manage your CDN, your VMs, your web apps, your serverless computing, and more. If I wanted to, for example, see all the VMs running in my subscription right now, I could say Azure VM list. Oops, I'm not logged in apparently. Well, I can also log in. This would basically allow me to manage my thingamabob here. You should not have to do this, but if it ever prompts you to, you can. Saves this for me in a very secure way. Decides to only reprompt me when it discovers I'm outside of my normal location, apparently in Belgium, in which case it's thinking I might be somewhere else. And just a second, there we go. Now it's actually working. So this just brought back a JSON version of all my resources. If I wanted to have a little bit friendlier output list, I could go ahead and pipe it as a table. So this now brings it back in a simple table format. And because, again, it's a full command line experience, if I wanted to say grep it and say just show me stuff that is in central, I could pipe it out that way and basically take advantage of kind of a full CLI experience. I could even run things like Vim if I wanted to. This is Vim. Will I be able to close it? I can. Good. Anyway, so that's just sort of another kind of thing that we're providing built into the product that you can kind of take advantage of. The other thing that we're doing is not just enabling you to create resources and manage them, but also figure out how you can monitor them. Because we know that one of the challenges in running in the full cloud is how do you actually know how all your resources are working? And so this is an example of a feature we have called App Insights that we have built in to the product. And this basically shows me all of resources inside a simple application that are running and the dependencies across them. So you can see there's a server-side app. It's talking to SQL. It's making some HTTP calls and calling some other server-side functionality. You can see it's mostly working, but there's about 3.2% of the time it's seeing some either slowness or some errors. And so one of the things we let you do is very easily drill into those types of issues. So if I want to see the failed requests that are happening, this will basically drill in to kind of a detailed view of how my application is running. It will show me here at the bottom all the requests that are failing, including URLs. I can then drill into those and actually see exactly when they failed or how long they took and be able to actually get out from this full details about that particular request, as well as exception detail information about it. So if I want to see the exact exception that occurred, I could drill in, and this will even show me, you know, this occurred when someone from Chicago, Illinois, on this IP address on a PC sent this particular request, and enables me to go ahead and, you know, completely manage it again throughout the experience. If I just lost the network. Hopefully not, because that's going to make the rest of the talk really awkward. Coming back. Good. Okay. Hopefully just a temporary network glitch. So anyways, that gives you kind of a sense a little bit in terms of the types of experiences that you can do inside the Azure Management Console and across all these different services, across monitoring and management. Last thing I'll just quickly show, and then we'll go back to the slides, is a capability we have built into Azure we call our Security Center. And what this does is gives you a way that you can not just manage your experiences from an availability or monitoring experience, but you can also look to see, are you following security best practices? And are the applications and the solutions you're building really robust and going to be secure? And so this is sort of built in, again, to the overall Azure experience. And it's a free part of Azure, so every Azure customer gets this. And it's constantly looking for places where you're not implementing what we'd consider security best practices. And so this is actually looking, for example, at all my virtual machines right now. And if I zoom in here, one of the things you might notice is it's highlighting a bunch of issues that we've identified as part of this subscription. So for example, there's a VM that's turned on, but it doesn't have endpoint protection. So it doesn't have kind of automatic security protection running inside the guest. I've got patches that I've applied to these VMs, but you'll notice on 12 of the VMs, I forgot to reboot them, or the script failed when it tried to reboot them, which means that the machine actually isn't patched, even though I think it is, and I should go take care of it. I don't have encryption at rest turned on 147 of the VMs. Again, potential a script that I forgot to run, or configuration that I forgot to misstep, and so forth. And so this gives you kind of a way that you can see always across everyone in your team, you know, where are you not following best practices? What should you implement to do so? And we do it not just at the VM level, but also at the networking level, the database level, and at the application tier level. And this is available to your IT teams, it's available to your security teams, but more importantly, it's available to every developer to take advantage of as well, and be able to use it to guide to build even better applications and solutions. So simple kind of trip across Azure, but hopefully you see throughout all this how we're trying to basically take what in the past were very different systems that you had to learn, put them together, and at the end of the day have a really robust system that you can use to build great things with. So in addition to features and kind of capabilities, you know, the other thing we've been hard at work at with Azure is expanding it to run all over the world. And so today we now run Azure in 40 Azure regions, which are made up of multiple data centers that are grouped together. And so this map here shows you with these little circles, places that we now have data center regions that you can take advantage of. You can see here in Europe, I think we have 10 regions now, more than any other cloud provider. We just opened up last week 2 regions in South Africa. We were the first cloud provider offering services in Africa. And we have lots in North America, South America, and throughout Asia, India, and Australia as well. And we're continuing to open up more regions around the world. And the beauty is everything I just showed you, you can now do in any of those 40 locations, literally with a click of a button or one command script. And what's cool about each of these locations is just how big they are. You know, I showed you that 3.5 terabyte VM. You know, the cool thing is you could run millions of those VMs all over the world using Azure. And what I thought I'd do is just show you a quick behind the scenes look into what one of these data center regions looks like to give you a sense of the scale and size at which they operate. So let's go ahead and watch a video. In addition to that scale that you can operate at, the other thing we've been very hard at work at with Azure is making sure that we provide all the right trust, security, and compliance regulations so that you can build solutions for literally any industry around the world and basically build and sell your products to them or be able to service your internal company as part of it. And we now have with Azure more trust certifications than any other cloud provider out there. And again, gives you the ability to kind of compete literally anywhere around the world and in any business or any industry. You know, this slide shows just some of the companies around the world that are using Azure today. We now have 90% of the largest 500 enterprises in the world deployed and running on top of Azure, really across every industry, and seeing tremendous success with them. I thought I'd do is show one more video of a couple of these customers talking about their experiences and some of the success they've had with it.
Microsoft Azure gives us key cloud-based infrastructure that we need. We made a big decision to break down our existing platform, which was one big, large, monolithic lump of software, into a microservice architecture.
This Black Friday, we served 167 million requests in the 24 hours. Average page response times came down by about half a second. That's what you're looking for in a new platform.
Azure provides the glue that brings together the data from our internal on-premise systems and join that with information held in the cloud. We use Azure Application Services and also Azure SQL Database to provide the data resources to the application. To achieve single sign-in, we have federated across from Azure Active Directory to our Oracle Access Management.
And that was fantastic. That was the equivalent of putting a very old car on the moon.
We wanted to make it really easy for our customers to get meaning out of their data. The industrial Internet of Things is different only in the fact that our customers have very stringent requirements about how data moves. We want one place to egress that data that we can lock down. The advantage of it being Azure is IoT Hubs makes it very easy to get that data in. Power BI makes it very easy to visualize that data once it's there.
It allows us to put a data scientist in a box.
Microsoft helped us achieve our digital transformation. It's put us over the top. GEICO's been growing leaps and bounds, and we have not had any issues whatsoever from a capacity perspective because of the on-demand capability and scalability of Azure. We can handle the volume. We're like, bring it on. We want more.
So let's drill in now into some of the services that we have and actually show off more demos in terms of how you could build applications and solutions on top of this massive infrastructure and really take advantage of what Azure has to offer. And you know, Azure has lots of services, so I'm only going to be able to scratch the surface today in terms of what you can do with it. What I thought I'd do is just kind of highlight a couple of the different categories of things that we deliver and hopefully show off some new stuff that you maybe haven't seen in terms of from a demo perspective along the way. So one of the things that we hear a lot, obviously, from people is as you're building cloud-based solutions, you know, what is that client experience look like? And obviously, for many apps, it's going to be a web browser. Other apps, it'll be a desktop application, say on Windows. But you know, the big thing that for many years, obviously, everyone's focused on has been really around mobile and the growth in mobile as kind of a primary way to build and deliver solutions. How many people here build mobile apps today? A number do. How many people would like to be able to build mobile apps even better and faster as part of their solution as well? Okay. So, you know, one of the things that that we're looking at doing is really providing a set of tools and platforms that enable you to do that so that you can build beautiful native apps that work on any device, whether it's iOS, Android, or Windows. Have a set of services that you can leverage as a developer so that you can build, test, distribute, and learn much, much faster across that. And then be able to leverage a really smart cloud on the back end that you can use to kind of host all that data, all that functionality, and again, scale it out all over the world. With VS 2017, which we just released, you know, we now build in native mobile tooling support as part of our Xamarin technology that enables you to build great immersive native mobile apps across any platform. And so you can build it for iOS, Android, and Windows, and be able to share a single code base that you can write using C# across all those different applications. And what's great about Xamarin is you can write to the native APIs inside the OS, so you can have take advantage of anything that any of those in particular, or any of those OS vendors provide. And then with things like XAML forms, we do provide a way that you can also abstract even some of the UI to be able to reuse UI across those devices as well. So you get both the power as well as the productivity capabilities that it delivers. We've also just shipped our VS for Mac release, our first version of Visual Studio that runs on the Mac. This is included in every Visual Studio subscription. So if you're already a VS for Windows customer, you also own VS for Mac. And this gives you also the ability to take those same projects with iOS and Android and develop them now on the Mac. In addition, we're adding ASP.NET, .NET Core, and Azure tooling support. So you can also now start to, and you'll see VS for Mac get richer and richer over time. So that as you work on your projects, you can literally work on any operating system device. And then with our Visual Studio Mobile Center, we're basically providing a set of services that you can use both with Xamarin as well as any other native mobile framework to basically build, test, deploy, and monitor your mobile applications, again, across any platform, and really provide a rich set of mobile capability that you can leverage and use. So what I thought I'd do is let's go ahead and show some demos of this in action. This is exciting because this is the first time ever I've demoed this. And I was able to successfully try it out for the first time about 25 minutes ago. So this will be new for everyone, the demo included. So I'm going to do a couple things here. First, I'm going to begin projecting my mobile app again. Get this working, hopefully. And so you can now see this is my mobile phone, and I'm going to, oops, if I can figure out how to drag this. There we go. I was worried there for a moment. I'm going to show off basically how you can do mobile application development using VS and just my mobile phone. So I have no Mac involved here. As part of this demo. So I'm basically just doing 100% on Windows for my development, and I've got an iPhone in my hand. It could be an Android device, could be another phone as well. But the cool thing here is I don't need to have a Mac or any other machine now in order to do development. I can actually just use these two particular devices and do everything with that. So what I'm going to do here is, within Visual Studio, when I create a new project, you've installed the mobile tooling during the setup, you'll notice here that we now have built-in project templates for doing iOS as well as Android, even Apple TV products directly inside here that I can take advantage of. Oh, look at that. The phone moves when I put it down. We won't put it down. And too much. This is cool. I gave the whole demo with one hand. And so what I have here open is a XAML forms project that I built. So it's a C#, it's using XAML as the UI markup layer. And this is gonna allow me to basically build my UI once and be able to run it consistently across multiple products. And what's cool is when I use XAML now, or Xamarin now, I can go into my tools menu. There's a thing called XAML Live Player. And what I can basically do is on my phone here, I just install a simple app called Xamarin Live. I can click Manage Devices inside Visual Studio. I'm going to click the pair to Visual Studio. It shows up a camera. I hold it up to my screen. And this is going to pair up now my phone with my Visual Studio instance here. And what this means now is I have this button here called Scott's Phone Player that if I click, this is now going to basically compile the application locally within my system. And what I should see in just a second is this app now running on my iPhone with Visual Studio attached without having to have any Mac, without actually having to add any additional machine into the environment. And I now have a full native mobile app being debugged by Visual Studio. Just to prove it's debugged, let me click on an item. And you'll notice I just broke in the debugger instantaneously. And so I can go ahead and step over something here. I can go ahead and hover over, and it's the full Visual Studio debugger that I know and love. So I can literally zoom in with one hand and see any of these particular members. Hit continue, and away I go. So really, really easy way that I can do mobile development faster than ever before using Visual Studio, using Windows, no extra device needed. Now there's even more I can do though. So let's go now into the XAML page here. And in addition to allowing me to debug an application, so I got code running, I can again use the full debugger. We also have kind of a nice way that you can go tools, Xamarin Live Player, and just run what's called the current view. And so this is loading up just that individual XAML form here that I'm currently editing. And what's nice is this is actually gonna be a real-time view that I can go ahead and add. So in this case here, I've got a list view, and I'm just gonna add in a little XAML snippet. And what you'll notice here is it immediately updated inside the live player. I didn't have to compile again. I didn't even have to push the deployment. It literally, as I'm making changes, is doing it in real time. So if I change this to, say, pink, navigate away, then you can see the color immediately changed. Everything's interactive. Everything is basically in real time. And the beauty is, again, I can use the language I love. I can use the tools that I love, whether it's on Windows or on a Mac, and basically now build this application in such a way that it'll work across any mobile device and any mobile platform, all seamlessly, all integrated inside the experience. So that's a little bit about what you can do in terms of enabling client mobile side development. You know, the thing that we recognize is, in addition to having the development tools that you want to use to actually build a UI, there's a lot more that you need when you build mobile-based applications. You want to be able to do things like build it in a continuous way. You want to be able to test these applications across not just the device in your pocket, but across hundreds of other devices out there. And once you distribute it, you want to be able to do it to beta testers first. You want to be able to get feedback, crash analytics, and more, and be able to have that as part of the experience. And that's where we came up with Visual Studio Mobile Center. And so with VS Mobile Center, you can basically create any number of projects for building native mobile apps. And the beauty is it works not just with Xamarin apps. It'll work with React Native. It'll work with native Objective-C or Swift or Android-based Java applications. So you can use it for any native mobile app that you're building, regardless of the language or the development tool you use. So I'm going to go into an existing one that we've already built here. And you'll notice here that as part of the build process, I can go ahead and basically manage any type of sort of build pipeline that I want to create. And I can open it up inside Visual Studio Team Services and use that as my source code repository. But we also support GitHub as well as other source control systems as well. And the beauty is, as I drill into any of these things, I can actually see all the builds that have taken place and set it up so that every time someone actually checks in code, we'll kick off a build and build it for you in the cloud. The beauty there is you don't need to have a build server. You don't need to actually develop it even locally. You just check in the code. We'll go ahead and do the build for you on a set of machines, including Mac devices that we run inside our cloud, that you can leverage to basically have these automated builds for you. And again, you can configure it so that you can use any version. In this case, this is an iOS one, so we can talk about which Xcode version we want to build. You can even configure it so that as soon as the build completes, we'll even, as part of the build process, test it on what's called a real device. And so what this basically is going to do is, as soon as the build completes, we'll actually fire up the app automatically as part of the build process and be able to run tests on it in a continuous integration way. And so let's go ahead and take a look at what that looks like. You might be saying, what do tests look like in the cloud for mobile apps? Well, the cool thing we have is a way that you can run tests and write tests in an automated way that can actually work across any type of app or any type of device. So let's actually look at this one here. And I can drill into, say, a particular test. And inside our cloud, we actually have thousands of real phones that we've wired up to the network. And basically, as part of your build process, we can actually distribute the app onto that phone device, that real device, and then basically run tests against it. So here's a whole bunch of iOS apps or devices. This is all 28 that Apple has ever made. And you can see as part of the scripts that I'm actually running, I have automated steps And if I want to drill into any one of these particular devices, I can see when this thing was running, how much memory, what CPU utilization it used, how responsive it was, and basically completely automate the end-to-end native app development experience here. Again, all running in the cloud, all just using Visual Studio. And then when I'm done, I can go ahead and distribute this app to either the world and publish it directly into the iOS, Windows, or Android stores, or I can define beta testers. And this uses some of the Hockey app technology that Microsoft bought a couple years ago. And so I can define my closest 100 friends that I want to push out and update to first, let them give me feedback, and then only later promote it to everyone else in the world. This also now integrates with our Intune technology, so if you are delivering to the enterprise, you can also push this automatically out to enterprise users without having to go through the main app stores. The beauty is all this is sort of nicely integrated, makes it super easy to build mobile, great mobile experiences. Again, ones that you can target and deliver across any platform. So that's a little bit about mobile development. Let's switch gears now and talk about something else that's top of mind, which is data. And you know, a couple of things that we hear over and over again from developers is, you know, data is paramount. It's in many ways the center point of a lot of the applications that you're building nowadays. And you want to be able to use the database of your choice to deliver those amazing experiences. And whether that's SQL, whether it's MySQL, Postgres, or other data platforms. And the other thing we hear often is, gosh, I want to get out of having to manually manage my database in a virtual machine. I don't want to have to patch it. I don't have to do backups. I want you to take care of more of that for me and really deliver databases as a service. And both of those things are things that we're focused very heavily on as part of what we're doing with Azure. So one of the things that we're doing even that works outside of Azure is really bringing forward our database platform in a pretty massive way. And in particular with our new SQL Server 2017 release that's going to be coming out in a few months. This is available now in public preview, including a preview that supports what we call a go-live license, so meaning it's ready for production. And this is the first version of SQL Server that works not just on Windows, but also works on Linux as well as Docker-based systems as well, meaning you can use it literally everywhere. It has industry-leading performance, so it has the top benchmarks of any database out there, both our previous releases as well as databases from Oracle and others, and it's screamingly fast query processor. And it has in-memory database support, so you can load that data in memory and perform real-time analytics against it. And with this release, we've embedded the support for you to go ahead and use R and Python directly in the database system, so that you can actually use machine learning and AI directly against your in-memory database and build even more intelligent apps as part of it. What's cool about SQL, though, is it's available not just in a VM, or not just on premises, but it also as a service that's fully managed that runs inside Azure. And by, what I mean by a service is it means that we do things like automatically patch it and run it in high availability for you. It means we do automatic backups and allow you to recover and restore back a database from any transaction that you've done over the last 30 days. So if you accidentally delete something or you accidentally introduce a bad bug inside your application, you can always unwind the database and effectively replay from that particular point for better improved reliability. And we do things like threat detection, performance optimization, a whole bunch more, all provided as a service. And with some updates that we just announced at our Build conference, we're now making it super easy that you can take any existing SQL database and migrate it with no application and no code changes to the cloud and be able to run it as a service. And with SQL 2017 and these new updates we're doing to our SQL database service, you can even have an on-premises database with a SQL database in the cloud in a single availability group inside SQL, so you can actually run them active-active across on-premises and in the cloud in a seamless way, which is something no other database vendor supports or provides today. So how many people here are using SQL Server today? A lot of people. Okay, so I think that means we got to do another demo. So let's go back into Azure and let's create a new database. So when you create a database today in an existing on-premises environment, how long does it usually take you to create that database? So you say to your IT team, I'd like a new database, please. Take a day, hours, weeks, months? Too long. Okay, so let's go ahead and create one here and see what we can do as part of this talk. So I'm going to go ahead and just say new database. And what do you want to call this database? Belgium Rocks. How about that? And I'm going to create a blank one here. I'm going to run it here. I can set a couple different settings here, and I'm just going to go ahead and click create. And so what this is now doing is provisioning for me a new database on in one of those Azure data centers. In this case here, I said West Europe. So it's running in Amsterdam, so it's about, what, 100 miles or less than 100 miles away, 100 kilometers away. And as part of this provisioning process, what Azure's doing is basically creating a new database instance, provisioning it for me. It's configuring it for high availability, so it's going to run this database across three separate servers for me, so that if any hardware failure occurs, it can fail over the database to another instance. It's wiring up a load balancer with firewall rules, and it's going to automatically take care of backups and patching for me automatically, so it's continuously up to date and basically kept in a way that I can basically work with it program against it just as I would any type of resource. And this typically takes about 60 seconds. And there it goes, it worked. And I now have a database that I can use. And that was it. That's all I had to do. And in 60 seconds, I now have a full relational SQL database in high availability, fully managed, that I can leverage. I get the connection strings, I can point SQL Management Studio against it, I can point SQL Server against it, and away I go. And what's nice is I can scale up or scale down this database if I need more compute power or more storage capabilities without application downtime. So I can start off with a very small database and pay a couple euros a month for it, but I can also scale it up. So if I need to run it across terabytes, and we support now up to 4 terabyte database sizes, with very, very high CPU loads, I can do that as well. And you know, ends up being kind of pretty easy to use. Let's go ahead and show off a couple features here. How many people have ever checked in a bug in their application that causes the performance to go down? Only one person. Good. That's good. But just in case you know someone else that's done that, let's talk about some of the cool features we have built into their SQL database service, which makes it a little easier to recover in the future, hypothetically, if you have that problem. And so what I'm loading here is a database that I already created that's got some performance issues. You can see the resource utilization went way up, and I might want to try to figure out what's going on, why is the system misperforming? And what you might notice at the top here is a little chevron that we show that basically says we've noticed something's wrong with your database. Do you want to basically view some recommendations that we've built on how you can optimize it further? And these are basically behind the covers machine learning algorithms that we run across your database looking to try to see what could make it faster. And so you'll see we automatically suggest indexes, ways that you can change to parameterize queries, and in some cases, dropping indexes if you've got duplicates that are conflicting. And this basically automatically runs for you and provides effectively a help system that helps guide you to build better performing apps. So in case of this one here, you can see exactly why we came up with it. And then you can actually see, even we'll generate the script for you of, here's what you should run inside SQL Management Studio. That'll create a non-clustered index. That'll dramatically improve your performance. And you can effectively accept or deny any of these recommendations. You don't have to follow them. But the nice thing is the system's constantly in the background effectively helping you build better performing applications automatically. Other kind of thing that you can take advantage of is built-in support for what we call threat detection. So let's go here. Anyone here ever have a SQL injection attack? Yes, one person did. So, you know, with a SQL injection attack, you know, a common thing you forget to do is effectively encode parameters. And so, in this case here, I got a login form. If I was a hacker, I might say, hey, let me actually just try to type in a username, then click a quote, and then say or 1 = 1. And what will happen is if you're not correctly encoding your SQL, if instead you're just taking the username and concatenating it in as a string, this is going to basically allow me to log in as user 100% of the time, regardless of whether the password's right. Because that second clause, or 1 = 1, followed by the comment, is going to basically escape out the password check. So very common issue, and I can basically log in, and now I own your system. So this is an application bug that happens, and it unfortunately happens way too often. One of the things we do with Azure now is we have a built-in set of systems we call kind of critical threat detection support. And so you can turn this on in any database, and what this is now doing is looking at your actual SQL usage. And again, we use machine learning automatically to try to detect, are we seeing what looks like attacks happening? And so in this case here, we're actually saying, hey, we think there's a real SQL injection attack happening against your system. And if you click here, we'll actually show you what we think is the vulnerable database and, or code. And we can say here, someone here just tried to run this SQL code. This looks suspicious to us. We think this is actually an injection attack. And so we're pinpointing for you inside your application what looks like suspicious activity. And then as part of this, we also provide links for what you should do to take care of it and how you can go ahead and protect yourself. And in addition to kind of highlighting it inside the portal, we'll by default also send you a mail, it looks sort of like this, which will actually tell you immediately, log in, we think there's a potential exploitation happening against your application. Again, here's what the problem is, here's how to fix it. Again, a nice built-in feature that's part of our SQL database service that you can just leverage and use to build better applications and more secure applications by default. So in addition to SQL, the other thing that we just announced last week is several new relational database service options that you can leverage as well. And so specifically, you can now not only use SQL as a service, but we also now have both MySQL as a service as well as Postgres as a service that you can leverage as well. And these work just like the SQL database service that I just showed, meaning you can create it very quickly and stand it up in about 60 seconds. It's fully managed, so you have high availability, you have backups, you can do point-in-time recovery from any point of those databases. And it's 100% compatible with all existing frameworks, libraries, applications, and tools. So you've got maximum flexibility as you look to take advantage and build relational databases in the cloud, and you can take advantage of enormous productivity with Azure as part of it. The other thing that we just released that we're pretty excited about is a new database service that we call Cosmos DB. And Cosmos DB is really designed to give you database data at planet scale, and is really kind of built around the recognition that as you build these types of mobile apps, as you take advantage of things like IoT, as you try to reach users all over the world, you really want to be able to take advantage of a globally distributed database as part of it, meaning the data doesn't just show up in the data center, one data center around the world, it can actually show up in all data centers around the world and be kept in sync consistently end-to-end across of it. And you probably want to be able in this database not just to store relational data, but also be able to put things like key value pairs or documents or graph databases so you can build even richer applications and be able to handle more forms of data in a very rich way and be able to use any API against it. And that's what Cosmos DB gives you. So with Cosmos DB, you can stand it up, you can pick an initial region, let's say West Europe, but then you could also go ahead and have it partitioned out across the world. So I could have an instance of it in Australia or in China or in South Africa or South America or in, say, North America. And any change that I make will be replicated automatically in all those locations. And I can actually have my applications read from the most the closest region to the end user that's actually working around it. And we keep all those things in sync for you. It's multi-model and multi-API. So again, I can score key value, document, column, as well as graph data inside it. And I can use any API I want against it. So I can use a SQL API with DocDB, or I can use MongoDB, which is the popular open source language or framework. I could use Gremlin, which is a new graph-based API, very popular in the open source world. And I can use Spark if I want to do analytics jobs against this data as well. And it's designed to scale basically to any size that I want as well. So you can create a Cosmos DB database and start with just say a gigabyte or two of data, but then scale it up to be petabytes of data in size. Similarly, I could start with, say, just 100 transactions per second, and then if I wanted to, scale it up to be millions of transactions per second throughout the system, so I can drive enormous load against it. And what's nice about Cosmos DB is it also is the only database service out there that doesn't just provide an SLA around availability, meaning is the database up, it also provides SLAs around performance, both latency as well as throughput that I can throw against it. And so we'll guarantee, as an example, that all your read operations complete in single-digit milliseconds. So less than 10 milliseconds for every query that you throw against the system, regardless of where in the world it is, regardless of whether it is against petabytes of data or gigabytes of data, and regardless of whether you actually have millions of concurrent transactions hitting the system at the same time. This enables you to build sort of enormously scalable apps in a way that no one else can. You know, one of the customers that's using us, it's a retailer in the US, it's part of Walmart, this is the largest retailer in the world, it's a company called Jet. And they were a startup that built on Azure. They actually built their entire system in under a year. They were just bought for $3.5 billion. And they are a retailer that provides e-commerce. And you know, they've deployed their application now inside Azure and with Cosmos DB across three separate Azure regions in the US, since they're primarily a US retailer. And on peak traffic days, they scale up to 100 trillion transactions per day against the database, which is a huge amount of load. And the beauty is, after the big shopping days and the holidays are over, they scale it way down, and they only pay for what they're actually using. And again, they're able to sustain single-digit performance at the 99th percentile as part of it. So let's go ahead and show off some demos of what this looks like in action and how you can take advantage of it. So I'm going to go to machine 7 here. So now I'm going to go to a Mac here and show off Cosmos DB. And so what I have here is an app that is running locally on my machine using Node.js that is basically a simple comic wiki app. Anyone here like Marvel Comics? It's a popular developer event. So anyways, think of this as like a wiki. So it's, you know, I can look up characters in the Marvel Comics space and hear about what all they do. I can also go ahead and ask questions. And so if I want to say, who are the friends? This is for Tony Stark, which is the page I'm on. Hit enter, and this basically is pulling back Captain America, Black Widow, Thor, and a whole bunch of other people. If I want to go example and say, you know, who are your enemies that work for Hydra? So it's a complex query, so it's not just pulling back a straight dependency, but it's a dependency of a dependency. I can go ahead and run that, and again, very quickly you can see the response of that question, where it's again fanning out a query that takes advantage of kind of multiple relationships throughout the system. You know, the first query you could do against, you know, a standard relational database, just a master detail style relationship. The second query is pretty hard to do in a traditional relational model. There you really want to be able to take advantage of a graph system where you can write queries that can actually traverse a graph data and be able to look at those arcs and those edges to be able to kind of build your system. And that's where Cosmos DB can really help, because it doesn't just enable you to save lots of data, but you can also go ahead and represent graph data in a really clean way and use a graph-based programming model against that data. So let's go ahead and zoom this in a little bit more. And let's just walk through what does it look like to build a graph database using Cosmos DB. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new database. You saw me create a SQL database earlier. Let's go ahead and create a Cosmos DB database now instead. As you can see, it's in the database menu. And as part of this, I just give it a name. I then can choose optionally a default API. And so you can see here, I could do MongoDB, I could do DocDB, which is a SQL-based API, a table API, or I can use this Gremlin API, which gives me this nice graph programming model. Again, it's just the popular open source framework there. I choose my initial region, hit create, and this will now stand up for me a fully managed database store that's running all over the world. Let's look at one I already have deployed that has the data for this Marvel Comics loaded up in it. And so what I have here is, again, sort of the management blade for this particular Cosmos DB instance. And if I click on Data Preview here, Data Explorer, I can actually traverse the data that's stored in the system. So I'm going to look at the Heroes collection. And if I go ahead and just run a default filter here, this is going to bring back from the data store, a whole bunch of data. And so this is, as you can see here, a graph structure of all my Marvel comic characters. You'll notice right now it's got kind of WIDs that it's showing. That's sort of the IDs of each. Let's just go ahead so it makes it easier, change it so that we can show the label or the name instead on it. And you can then, again, see the relationship of all these different entities and how they're actually related together. And again, that's where you can start to see the power of the graph in that you can actually write queries against it. And using the Gremlin syntax, if I wanted to, I could actually just type in a Gremlin query here, hit apply, and it would actually execute directly in the management console here and allow me to try it out and see what the code is. Let's look at what that code actually looks like. So this is, Gremlin has a .NET API, it has Java APIs, and it also has a Node API. So this is an example of loading the standard Gremlin API using TypeScript in a Node.js app. So I just load the standard library, and then I can very quickly create queries that I can execute against the system, again, using whatever language I want. In this case here, you know, again, this app was built using Node.js just to kind of prove that it truly is open, and I'm running everything here on a Mac against that Azure Cosmos instance. Now, what's nice about this is I can load my data, I can query it using whatever language I want, and you know, I get a graph database. That's nice in and of itself, but where Cosmos DB really shines is this ability to run the system everywhere. And so this is an example, I just click on the replicate data globally, of all the places around the world that I'm currently running this Cosmos DB instance. And so for example, if I want to run this in, say, Osaka, Japan, since I got a bunch of Marvel comic fans there, all I need to do is click on this map, hit save, and Cosmos DB is now scaling out this database to also now support running inside Osaka, Japan. And so in the background here, it's replicating it, it'll stand up an instance, at which point, if I ran my instance of my app inside Japan, it would automatically be going against that system in real time, super fast performance. That's how easy it is to scale out and run literally everywhere, whether it's gigabytes, terabytes, or petabytes of data. What I can also do with Cosmos DB, which is nice, is as I'm scaling out my data to run in all these different data centers at very high scale, is I can choose what is the data consistency model I want across that replication. And this is a challenge you have with a distributed database model, where I might want to, say for a financial transaction, go ahead and have that transaction guaranteed to replicate across all those regions at the same time before it commits. That gives me kind of 100% accuracy, which I might want, say, for a financial transaction or a financial thing to occur. You know, but for most applications, I don't need that type of consistency, and I really don't want to have to wait for every database instance around the world to commit to it. And so that's where, with Cosmos DB, I can configure multiple consistency models so that I could instead say I want eventual consistency, meaning complete the transaction immediately as soon as it writes locally, but then I can go ahead and replicate it to those other, say, 20 regions around the world in the background without blocking that individual transaction. Or I can do things like a session level consistency, which is a nice alternative, which basically means if my app writes and then reads anywhere around the world, it's guaranteed that my app will always see, or that user will always see consistent data, but in the background it can be eventually consistent. And this gives me lots of flexibility for me to have a super performance system that can also be enormous scale, and again, be able to run it everywhere. And then the last thing I can go ahead and do is, if I wanted to, I can go monitor my metrics. And with the metrics view inside Cosmos DB, this will actually show you how is the database system performing, and in particular, is it living up to the SLA that we actually provide? And so you can actually see here, you know, we guarantee 10 millisecond read and response time. We guarantee the session consistency level of 100%. We're doing well along those lines. And at any point, you can effectively click on the metrics tab to basically guarantee, are we living up to the promise that we gave you in terms of the availability and consistency of the service, and are basically delivering the promise that we made. And so, you know, in combination, all these different things give you incredible performance and the ability to kind of build new types of systems that just weren't possible before with any other technology. And what's nice about Cosmos DB is it is available to use today. And so all these things that I'm showing you, you can take advantage of and leverage now anywhere around the world to build sort of truly amazing global scale solutions and applications. So we talked about data, we talked about mobile. Let's talk about writing code some more, and in particular, talk about containers. How many people here are doing container-based development today? A couple of hands. How many people would like to do container-based development? People here have no idea what would be involved to do container-based development. A few more. Okay, so there's some good sessions here, I know, at the conference that are going to go deeper in terms of containers. In general, though, I'd say, one of the things that we're really excited about with containers is this ability with containers to change how you develop code to be much more agile and to enable a more rapid release cadence where you can factor your code into kind of more isolated microservices, you can update them independently, and hopefully you can get much more developer agility out of it as a result. And we see lots of excitement for people in terms of wanting to use containers. Common question we get, though, is, well, how the heck do I go from where I am today, where I have a code base that wasn't built for containers, to move to a container-based model? And that's one of the things we're trying to make easier with both Visual Studio and with .NET, as well as with some services that we provide as part of Azure. So with Visual Studio 2017, we now have built-in container development support and integrated Docker tooling directly inside the IDE. This basically means you can take any project, whether it's a new project built with, say, .NET Core, which is our new .NET runtime, which is really optimized around very low working set, very fast startup time, is really ideal for a microservice-based approach. But you can also use this Docker tooling with existing full .NET framework projects that you already have. And so you can basically leverage it with existing code bases that maybe started 10 or 15 years ago without having to completely rewrite them in order to move to a container-based microservice approach. And what's great is you can use this tooling to get kind of end-to-end development, debug, test, and deploy support all within the IDE. And then you can leverage, optionally, Visual Studio Team Services if you want a complete DevOps lifecycle experience that you can leverage as part of it. What I thought I'd do is let's go ahead and do another demo and show off some of this in action. So that's machine 5. And I'm going to confess this machine was giving me a little bit of finicky, something with hardware where the mouse wasn't working. So hopefully this will work, but if it starts flipping out, it's not software, it's the hardware. So what I have here is a simple application that is using the full .NET framework. So it's using .NET 4. And it's a in-tier application. I've got a web tier and I've got an API tier as part of it. And this wasn't built with .NET Core. This wasn't built for microservices. This is built to be a full Windows-based server application. So it uses IIS, it uses WCF, and it uses a whole host of Windows-specific capabilities as part of it. And what I want to do is Dockerize it and be able to run it in containers. In this case here, inside Windows containers, because it's using IIS and WCF and the full power of Windows Server. And so the good news is doing this is not as hard as it sounds. In fact, what I can basically do with Visual Studio 2017 is go ahead, right-click on the project, I can click Add, and there's a new command called Docker Support that we now expose inside the IDE. And if you click that, this is now going into that particular project, and it is going ahead and adding Docker metadata support inside the project and at the solution level. And so what you can see here is inside the project now, I've got a Docker file that's automatically been added. And this is the standard Docker format. And you'll notice that the first line here in Docker indicates what image you want to base this container on. And you'll notice this is the full ASP.NET 4.6 based image that we provide. So this is running a full image that has ASP.NET 4.6.2 installed, has IIS, it has Windows, has WCF, and I can basically use this just like I would inside a virtual machine, but now it's running inside a container instead of a VM. And I can do the same thing with my API, and you'll notice there's a Docker compose file that basically is a YAML format, which basically just shows how these services will actually interrelate together. And so here is what my application actually does. So again, it's a simple CRM-like application where I can view users. I can go ahead, if I click on a particular item, I can edit it. You'll notice here, as soon as I did this, this is a version of the app that's been fully containerized. So I added the Docker file to the other project as well. And what's cool is you'll notice I'm getting full debugging experience as part of this. So I am in the debugger here in a container image. If I hit continue, you'll notice it hits another breakpoint. In this case here, it's hitting the breakpoint in the API project as well. So I've got two containers running. I've got debugging across both containers. I got a single application working. And so far, I haven't had to change a single line of my .NET code. So it's still IIS, still WCF, still all the .NET capabilities that I know and love, but it's now running in a containerized approach. And you know that application is just working, and I can go ahead now and leverage this. What's cool then is if I want to, is I can now go ahead and say, okay, now that I can do this locally, let's go ahead and set this up for CI/CD and be able to kind of replicate this to run, say, in the cloud as well. And one of the things that we now also have is the ability to, you can effectively just right-click and set up continuous integration and continuous delivery directly inside the IDE. And this will go ahead and configure a Visual Studio Team Services project that will go ahead and every time you make a check-in, build this in the cloud using the build services that we provide as a service. And so in this case here, this is an example CI/CD project that's been created from that simple application. You'll notice here it's getting my source. It works against VSTS or GitHub or other source code repositories. It's doing a NuGet restore. It's building the solution. And then there's a bunch of Docker-specific commands to Dockerize the app, just like I was inside the IDE. And then I can publish and push it to, say, a container registry or release it into a container service, all in an automated way. And in addition to the built-in commands that we have, we also have sort of a full marketplace of commands where you can go ahead and add additional statements. So if I want to use some Java code with that as well, we've got full Ant, Nant, and other build support. If I want to run a PowerShell script or a Bash script, I can also integrate that as part of the build pipeline. The other thing we then do is have full release management. And so as part of the release management here, I'm configuring it so that when the build succeeds, I want to push this into what's called a Service Fabric cluster to actually run it inside the cloud. And I can do that either manually, or I could require an architect or a manager to hit OK before it deploys. I can configure both. And you'll notice with a single command, I can now completely deploy this app into Azure in a completely automated way. And once what this app then looks like in Azure is something like this. So this is the Service Fabric cluster, where I've basically got five VMs or five nodes running inside the cloud. And what's cool is I am now running 114 applications across those VMs in my container service. And so this is enabling me to basically dramatically reduce the amount of infrastructure that I need to run my applications and pack more applications onto a single set of resources, but have them be fully isolated from a container-based approach, which basically saves me a bunch of money, gets me much more agile, and enables me to build even better and greater stuff. And what's cool is once this thing is actually deployed, I can then use that same set of Azure management portal that you saw earlier to basically monitor my entire set of systems with a single dashboard that both my IT team and my developer team can monitor in real time. And this is basically showing me, starting at the bottom, the raw host metrics. So in other words, how this cluster is performing from a network storage compute perspective. Do I need to add another node into the cluster because I'm starting to fill up the max amount of CPU? I can see that pretty easily. I can then also go up here at the container level and actually see how are the containers performing. Do I have any errors that are throwing at the container perspective? And then I can go all the way up to the application level and actually see how do all these different container services work together. And am I seeing any errors across the different containers as part of that from a monitoring experience? And the beauty is I can see everything in one view. And I now have a pipeline that I can set up, take all my existing code, easily containerize it, run it in the cloud in this microservice-based approach, and then go in and start to factor out my architecture into more microservices and be able to piece them together and integrate them in a very rich way. The beauty is we now provide all those tooling support for you to go ahead and easily do that. Now, the way I was using deploying these containers in the cloud was using a technology that we deliver called Service Fabric. And it's something that we actually build our own services on top of. So that Cosmos DB database that I talked about earlier is built entirely using Service Fabric. Similar, our SQL DB service running in the cloud, as well as even our Postgres DB and our MySQL DB engine, is actually running on top of Service Fabric as well. So it's a very, very powerful framework that we use ourselves. You can use it as well to build microservice applications. It supports both Windows and Linux-based containers. So that previous example, I started with a Windows app and containerized it. But if I wanted to take a Java app as well, I could go ahead and deploy that inside that same Service Fabric cluster and have the .NET and Java applications running as one unified cluster talking to each other in a microservice-based approach. It also supports both stateless containers, which is what I was showing here, but also stateful. So if I want to do things like leader election or distributed quorum management or state management, I could do it at very, very high scale, replicated across multiple systems, and build incredibly fast solutions. And what's great is it works in Azure. It also works on Azure Stack, which I'll talk about in just a moment, as well as on on-premises systems. So you can basically leverage it anywhere in order to build your systems and be able to run them at scale. And Service Fabric is just one of the different approaches that we support for deploying containers inside Azure. We also have our container service, which supports all the popular open source container technologies, as well as our web apps and batch technology. So just because I'm make sure I finish on time, since there's lots of speakers, let me skip ahead to the Azure Stack section and talk about Azure Stack. So we've talked about a lot of great stuff that you can use in the cloud. But you know, one of the things I often hear at events like this is people say, you got me all excited about the cloud, but here's the problem. My company doesn't let me use the public cloud just yet. Or there's a particular reason why we can't just now. I wish I could use all this technology, but I can't. And so that's one of the reasons why, in addition to building Azure, which runs inside Microsoft data centers, we're also delivering what we call Azure Stack, which is an instance of Azure that you can run in your data centers as well as into any service provider data center that you want to take advantage of. And with Azure Stack, we look to provide the same programming model, the same management tools, so you can use Visual Studio and just right-click and deploy just like you would to public cloud Azure. It's the same management portal you saw earlier, same management APIs, both PowerShell and Bash scripts, but it's a version that runs completely self-contained, doesn't have an internet dependency, and can run anywhere around the world that you want to deploy it. And you can use Azure Stack for a wide variety of different scenarios, and I thought I'd do is just walk through a couple of them to explain how it can be leveraged. So one powerful thing about Azure Stack is it can be used completely disconnected and at the edge. Anyone here ever done a cruise ship line tour? A couple people have. So one of the most popular cruise ships out there is Carnival Cruise Lines. They use Azure today, and they start off using public cloud Azure, and they basically have a data lake that they run inside our data centers. They use IoT technology to take up data off the ship, and they basically use Azure to do fleet management across all the different vessels that they run. And it's been great, they love it. So they're big believers in public cloud. You know, the challenge they had was, what do they do on the ship itself? And a lot of their ships are off at sea, and having an internet dependency on anything on the ship is risky, because sometimes the ship can't connect to a satellite, they can't connect to the internet. And so if you have something on board that has to talk to an Azure data center running somewhere on land, you know, that isn't going to work. And so what they built, they're looking to take advantage of is Azure Stack on the actual ship itself. And so they're going to put an Azure Stack instance on each of their ships. And now they can use the same set of technology, things like Service Fabric. They can build web apps and mobile apps, like I showed. They can use even serverless functions and be able to run them entirely on the vessel and have a completely disconnected system that'll work regardless of where they are at sea. And then when they go into port, they can connect up to the public cloud internet and connect to their on-premises, their cloud-based systems as well, and have the same code, the same application model, and the same management model across both. You know, another scenario for how we see people using Azure Stack is to meet literally any regulatory requirement or need that they have. And you know, I talked earlier about how Azure now runs in more countries and locations than any other cloud provider, and has more trust certifications than the other cloud provider, but sometimes there's unique requirements above and beyond what we can provide with public cloud today. You know, one example would be a customer of ours, EY, Ernst & Young, which is one of the largest professional services firms in the world. And they provide tax auditing services to lots and lots of clients around the world. And they use Azure today to deliver solutions to the majority of their clients around the world. So they use the public cloud today to deliver those types of tax services. And the data in these tax services are amongst, you know, the most sensitive data in the world, because it's basically all of the financials and all the internal documents for all of their clients. So they, security is paramount to them. And they use public cloud Azure to do that. But there's some countries in the world, take Russia as an example, where you can't take that data outside the country. And so they can't use the public cloud because there isn't a public cloud provider that runs inside Russia today. And that's where they're looking to take advantage of Azure Stack. And they're able to basically have the same application, run it in our data centers for most of their clients. And then where needed, they can stand up an Azure Stack instance to meet any of those local needs and any of those regulatory needs. And that gives them an incredibly powerful system that they can go ahead and leverage with a single code base and a single environment. We're going to just play one more video of them talking about what Azure Stack gives them and why they adopted it.
There's an explosion in innovation, technology, the digitization of business. Markets can be exploded overnight in a positive way or a negative way. Our clients look to us to help them take advantage of the opportunity that is just blossoming all around the world. Trust is really central to our relationship with our customers. Our advisory, tax, assurance practices are all technology driven. Developers are central to delivering that value.
Azure and Azure Stack allows us to have a single point of development.
We develop one solution and we can run that in public Azure or Azure Stack. The fact that we're always targeting the same set of services, we can provide the same set of SLAs to our customers. We use the same PowerShell tools that we use today with public Azure in order to stand up all the environments. The combination of virtual machine skill sets and load balancers, we can even spin up Service Fabric Cluster, seemed pretty striking to me. That is something that puts developers in the driver's seat.
Azure Stack gives us the ability to put Azure in countries where Microsoft does not have a full Azure data center. We are building on the digital platform and satisfying data privacy and sovereignty regulations in 140 countries around the world.
The possibilities are endless in being able to move applications, revisions of applications, and in-country-specific applications for data sovereignty or custom use cases from one central location, one central code base.
Our vision is really to enable a better working world. Our charge is to make sure that the technology we build and deliver serves our clients and preserves the trust that they are putting in us to do the work.
And you know, the beauty here again is you can use Azure Stack anywhere, on a ship, in a country, or for a regulatory environment that you need, or even if you just have, say, example, on-premises systems that use a mainframe, that use, say, a hardware database that you can't move yet to the public cloud. You know, you can start using Azure Stack to modernize your apps with the same programming model and then have that flexibility to run it on premises or in our data centers in the future. So I talked a lot about Azure today, showed off a whole bunch of demos. You know, hopefully one of the things you saw here is, you know, really this focus around guiding your success that we're really trying to build into the product. You know, in terms of having an experience that really pulls together things like security, monitoring, management, all in an end-to-end way with a fantastic development environment. One that really enables you to take advantage of cutting-edge innovations, whether it's containers, whether it's around mobile apps, whether it's around serverless capability, AI, and more that we didn't get a chance to chat about, and do it in a very secure, trusted way, and with an agility that gives you the ability to kind of deliver results faster than ever before. And you know, I know there's a bunch of great sessions throughout this week, today and tomorrow that you're going to be able to go to that will go into more depth on Azure and what you can do with it. And I'm really looking forward to seeing, hopefully, the great solutions that you build with it. And again, really thankful to be here today, and I hope you have a fantastic event. Thanks a bunch.